Okay, today's daf is Bav Metzia, daf Kuf Yud Tes, the last daf of Maseches Bav Metzia. We are holding on daf Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis. We are at the Mishnah on Kuf Yud Ches, the first Mishnah on Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis at the top of the page. The Mishnah is going to talk about what one is permitted to use a Rishus HaRabim for. Normally Rishus HaRabim, even though it might damage, normally you're not allowed to put any sort of mazik out in a Rishus HaRabim, but there are certain situations where you're allowed to use a Rishus HaRabim. So Mishnah is going to discuss what you may or may not use a Rishus HaRabim for. The Gemara is then going to give a list of Tanaim who all hold that if you're allowed to do something, then you're putter from any damages that it causes, meaning that once we say that this is a permissible activity, we're not going to then say that you're chayiv if any damage is caused by that permissible activity. Then the Gemara is going to talk about who is chayiv for damage that's caused during construction. There are apparently many different people involved, from the moment that you start making a brick to the point that you actually put it in a building and it is left there to stay. So at different points in the process, if it does damage, at different points in the process, who is going to be chayiv for the damage that it causes? And then the last Mishnah of the Masechta, on the bottom of Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis, is going to discuss who is entitled to plants that grow on the incline in between two gardens. You have an upper garden and a lower garden, and there are plants that grow on the incline between the two gardens. On the one hand, it's growing out of the karka, the dirt that belongs to the Elyon. On the other hand, it's growing into the airspace of the Tachton. The Mishnah is going to have three different shittos about how to resolve that issue, and that's going to lead the Gemara into discussing two cases where Tanayim argue whether something that grows from the trunk of a tree is considered part of that original tree, or it's considered to be a new tree. We're going to discuss it in Dinim Mamonis and in Dinim of Arla. And then the very last discussion of the Masechta revolves around the Shita of Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah. That Rabbi Shimon's Shita in reconciling how to deal with the plants that grow on the incline was that whatever the guy from the top garden is able to reach, he's entitled to, and whatever he can't reach, he's not entitled to. So the Gemara is going to explain Shitas Rabbi Shimon and give some of the details of Shitas Rabbi Shimon and some impressions of what we think about paskening like Rabbi Shimon. So let's begin at the Mishnah on Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis. Says the Mishnah, Hamotzi Zevel L'Rishus HaRabim. If a person brings out Zevel to Rishus HaRabim, manure out into the Rishus HaRabim in order to bring it out to his fields, in order to manure his fields, in order to treat his fields. So motzi motzi v'mezavel mezavel. The halacha is it has to be immediate that you take it out into the Rishus HaRabim. The guy who's going to be in charge of being mezavel your fields has to receive it out there, and right away, as soon as you dump it out into the Rishus HaRabim, he takes it out to the fields and he's mezavel the fields. But it cannot sit there for any period of time. It has to all be immediate. The Tosfos Rid has a girsa, Hamotzi Zivlo L'Rishus HaRabim Lizabolim, that it's coming to make it very clear that you're not trying to just clean out your house, you're not just trying to dump something out of your house. The point is that there's a purpose to what you're doing, a productive purpose, not just a getting rid of it purpose, a productive purpose, that you need this Zevel, and you have to take it out of your house if you're going to use it. And he says, yes, that's when it's mutter, when the purpose is to be mezabel one's garden, that's when you're allowed to take it out of Rishus HaRabim. As opposed to if you don't need it, then there's no such hetter to put it out of Rishus HaRabim at all. However, the Mordechai quotes from Maram that a person is allowed to take out even mayim sruchim l'Rishus HaRabim as long as you want to remove it immediately, that it has nothing to do with your intention, it's all about how quickly you're going to remove it. So if you're going to remove it immediately, even if it's useless, it's just garbage that you're trying to get rid of from your house, that would be mutter as well. So that's the machlokes rishonim. Says the Mishnah further, ein shorin tit, one b'rishus harabim, one is not allowed to soak clay in a rishus harabim, ve'ein lovnim levenim, nor is one allowed to produce bricks in a rishus harabim. You do that in your own private property. Aval govlin tit b'rishus harabim, but one may need clay in a rishus harabim, need with a K, avalo levenim, but not bricks. So the achronim are bothered by the double expression over here. We already said ve'in lovnim levenim. So what's avalo levenim? We already said you're not allowed to make bricks. So of course, what's the lo levenim adding? So the Cheshek Shlomo explains, and the back of the Gemara, that first the Mishnah says that you're not allowed to make levenim al menas to leave them in the Rosh Hasharabim to dry. Now the Mishnah is saying that even if right away you're going to make the levenim and right away remove them and use them for construction, even that's going to be asur to do. So that's the double expression about levenim. It's two separate halachos. One is to make the bricks in order to leave them there. The other is to make the bricks and get rid of them right away. Either case is going to be asur. But then the Cheshek Shlomo quotes that there's another girsa in the Rif over here, where the girsa sarif is not avalo levenim, it's avalo lilabnam. And according to that, the Mishnah is telling me that it's mutter to be megabel tit Rosh Hasharabim to put it into a building right away, but you're not allowed to be megabel tit al menas to make levenim out of that tit. That even the actual making of the levenim has to be done in a Rosh Hayachid, because the previous line was govlin tit Rosh Hasharabim. So this is going back on the govlin tit, that you're allowed to be govel tit Rosh Hasharabim, but not lelabnim, not if you're trying to make levenim out of that that mud or that clay that you are that you're needing. Habona Rosh Hasharabim, someone is building in Rosh Hasharabim, Hamevi Avana Mevi Vabona Bona, also has to be immediate. You're going to bring the building material, you're going to bring the stones, and then the person who's going to build it is going to build it immediately. Vim Hizik Mashali Mash Hizik, and if it damages in that process, you're chayiv to pay for any damages that are done. Rosh Hashanah Liya Lomer Af Mesakin Hu Es Malachto Lifnei Shloshim Yom, that you can even set up the building materials 30 days in advance. It's unfair to start a construction project where you're going as needed, where each material is just there as needed at the very moment that it's needed. It's understood in construction that you're going to need to line up your materials in advance, and therefore, says Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, there's such a heter that for 30 days in advance, one is allowed to line up their building materials. But Tanakama said, no, if it damages, you're chayiv to pay what it damages, and it has to all be immediate. Why are you chayiv to pay? If you didn't do anything wrong, you used it, you took care of it immediately, and it damaged anyway. So the Chazon Yecheskel and the Tosefta, he explains, yes, we allow you to do building in the Rosh Hasharabim, but you also need to set up proper precautions. You need to have those orange cones or whatever, you know, something to warn people that there's a, that this is a construction zone and that they need to be careful. So therefore, you are chayiv if for any damage that's done, because if there's damage that's done, it means you didn't take proper precautions for public safety. Says the Gemara, Lema Masnisin Delo Rabbi Yehuda. Our Mishnah seems to be against the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Ditanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Bishas Hotza Zvalim Adam Motzi Zivlo L'Rosh Hasharabim V'Tzovar Kol Shloshim Yom K'dei She'en Nishav Bragli Adam Bragli Behema Shal Menas Kein Hinchul Yoshua L'Yisrael Asa'aretz. Because we find that Rabbi Yehuda holds that if it's the time of Hotza Zvalim, if it's the winter season when people typically bring their Zevel out into the Rosh Hasharabim, so you can do that. You can bring your Zevel out into the Rosh Hasharabim, leave it there for 30 days so that people will trample all over it. And that's part of the rights to living in Eretz Yisrael, that part of Almanas Kain, Hinchel Yoshua L'Yisrael, Asaretz, that that's how, part of what we're allowed to do for Yerushas Haaretz. Rashi says that, what does it mean, Kol Shloshim Yom? Mishloshim L'Shloshim Chozel L'Tzovro, in order that it should be Nishaf Yafa, that you can go and keep piling up every 30 days. That it sounds like even after 30 days, you can gather it back in and dump it back out into the Rosh Hasharabim as needed, because this is part of the use of Eretz Yisrael that we're allowed to do. The Bach points out that the Hetzet Mimotzi Rosh Hasharabim is even if you take a lot of galalim that cause an awful smell or that are disgusting, and it's not like being Ashan or Beis HaKisei, which are Aser, because Ashan, Beis HaKisei, those kinds of things are Aser, the Gemara tells us, because those are things that are Kavua and are going to be there for a long, long time. But galalim, since you're going to need to get rid of them after 30 days, you're going to need to clear them out after 30 days, that's why it's going to be mutter. So this is something that one is just allowed to do. It's part of the proper use of the land. But bottom line is, our Gemara is suggesting our mission is against Rabbi Yehuda, because you see very clearly that Rabbi Yehuda holds that you're allowed to leave the zvalim out in the Rishus HaRabim for 30 days. And our Mishnah says, no 30 days, no 30 minutes, no 30 seconds. It's got to be immediate. You dump it out there, the guy is going to go in right away and take it down to the fields. Says Ma'afilu Tem Rabbi Yehuda. Maybe our Mishnah could even be going like Rabbi Yehuda. Mod Rabbi Yehuda, Shem Hizik, Chayev L'Shalim. Our Mishnah says that if you don't want to be Chayev, you got to get rid of it right away. But if it does damage, then Neina Chinami, you're going to be Chayev to pay. So yes, Rabbi Yehuda says you could leave it there for 30 days, with the understanding that if you do leave it there for 30 days and someone gets hurt by it, you're going to have to pay for it. So then that begs the question. So what was the Almanaskein Hinchul Yeshua Sa'aretz? What did Yeshua do for us? I'm chayiv to pay for it if Yeshua says, don't worry, leave it out there. But I'm chayiv to pay anyway if I leave it out there. So what was the point of what Yeshua allowed us to do? So this gets back to a discussion we've had a long time ago about the Isser of Mazik, that there are two separate dinim when it comes to Nezikin. When it comes to Nezikin, there's the Chiyuv of Mazik, that you have to pay when there's Hezik, and then there's also, independently, the Isser of Mazik. We gave the example. Rabbi Daniel Feldman gave the example. You walk over to your friend's car with a sledgehammer in one hand and a checkbook in the other hand, that you're going to destroy his car, but don't worry, you'll pay for it right away. So what? You did nothing wrong? No, independent of the chiyuv of mazik, there's an isser of mazik. So it could be that's what Yeshua did. What Yeshua accomplished is he told us there's no isser over here. It just happens to be that you're going to have to pay, because that's understood, but you're not violating any isser. It's not considered that you're being negligent by leaving the zevel out in the Rosh Hashanah. The Levush understands that the Tanai of Yeshua is that you're allowed to do it so long as you watch over it and protect it and make sure that that nothing happens and that it doesn't do any damage. So once it's doing damage, you've already pushed beyond the limits of what Yeshua allowed you to do. However, the Sma in Choshe Mishpat says that that's not correct. In Siman Tov Yudal, Tzivkat Vav, the Sma writes that the heter of Yeshua is that even if you don't watch it, you just dump it out there and leave it there, you're allowed to do that so long as you pay for it if it does damage. Yeshua still helped us in the sense that you're allowed to do it. And we don't say, the guy can't say, the Bnei Rosh Hashanah can't say, get that stuff inside, it's liable to cause damage, and we don't want to deal with it, we don't want to have to sue you once it does damage. No, you can say, I'm allowed to leave it out here, and if it does damage, you'll have to sue me, and then I'll be chayiv to pay. But that's the trouble that you're going to have to go through. Says the Gemara. So now we said that our Mishnah fits with Rabbi Yehuda, that you're allowed to leave it out in the Rosh Hashanah. It's just that you're going to be chayiv if it does any damage. Vatnan. But didn't we learn in the Mishnah that Moder Rabbi Yehuda ben Erchanika shu patur mipnei shu osa b'rishus, that by definition Rabbi Yehuda says if your ner Chanukah does damage, you're patur. Why? Because you were allowed to leave it there. So don't you see that Rabbi Yehuda holds any time you're allowed to leave something there, my lav rishus to Beis Din, any time Beis Din will allow you to leave something there, by definition you're going to be patur. So how could you be miyashiv Rabbi Yehuda with our Mishnah by saying that yeah, Rabbi Yehuda holds that you're allowed to leave stuff there for 30, you're allowed to leave the zevel there for 30 days, but even though you're allowed to leave it there, you're going to be chayiv. No, we see the Rabbi Yehuda holds whenever you're allowed to do something, by definition, that means you're going to be pater. So says Gemara, lo, rishus de mitzvah. There's a difference between allowed to leave something there and fulfilling a mitzvah by leaving something there. Rabbi Yehuda holds that any time that there's a mitzvah being fulfilled by leaving something in the Rosh Hashanah, then you're going to be pater from any damage it causes. So when it comes to Ner Chanukah, that's a rishus de mitzvah. So that you're going to be pater. But when it comes to the zevel, there's no mitzvah in leaving the zevel in the Rosh Hashanah. So even though the Beis Din allows you to leave the zevel in the Rosh Hashanah, but it's not a mitzvah, and therefore you're still going to be chayiv if you leave the zevel in the Rosh Hashanah. Frek the Gemara va'atanya. Kol elu sha'amru mutarin lekalkel b'Rosh Hashanah im hizik chayiv l'shalem. Rabbi Yehuda poter, but didn't we learn that Rabbi Yehuda says you're poter even when it's just things that are rishus Beis Din, even things that are not a rishus to mitzvah? Rabbi Yehuda holds you're poter. So how do we reconcile Rabbi Yehuda with our Mishnah now? Meaning we wanted to say that Rabbi Yehuda would say that yes, you're allowed to leave it there, but you're chayiv if it does damage. We see clearly Rabbi Yehuda holds whenever you're allowed to leave something there, you're poter. Mutter, the Mechavarta Masnisan Delok Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, okay, we got to go back to our initial inclination, that our Mishnah is against Rabbi Yehuda, that Enoch Inami. The Mishnah says you're not allowed to leave Zevel out in Rosh Hashanah for any period of time. Rabbi Yehuda holds, yes, you are. You're allowed to leave it there for 30 days, and by definition, if you're allowed to leave it there for 30 days, you can be potter from any damages that it does. It's not only by Ner Chanukah that Rabbi Yehuda allows it. The Yerushalmi explains, when it comes to Ner Chanukah, the Yerushalmi in the 6th parak of Baba Kama writes that Rabbi Yehuda, when he says that you're potter by Ner Chanukah, you have, that he's moda by Ner Chanukah, that you're potter because you're osir b'rashus, with the same old true by any other mitzvah. What if you leave a sukkah in Rosh Hashanah and someone trips over your sukkah, or someone gets somehow damaged by your sukkah? So the Yerushalmi says, no such heter for a sukkah, because Ner Chanukah dafka has to be in Rosh Hashanah. There's no din that the sukkah has to be in the Rosh Hashanah. Ner Chanukah doesn't have to be in the Rosh Hashanah, but it has to border on the Rosh Hashanah at least. But by a sukkah, there's no such din. The Rashba writes the same way, Shittim Gvetzas, Mabakam, Samach Beis, quotes the Rashba that it's dafka by Ner Chanukah, because that is the tzura of the mitzvah. But any other mitzvah where it's not part of the mitzvah that it be in a public area, we would not say the same thing. However, the Me'iri in Baba Kama Samach Beis disagrees. He thinks that there's no distinction between mitzvos, any mitzvos that you're honestly just trying to do the mitzvah, even if you happen to be doing it in Rosh Hashanah Rabim, Rabbi Yudol, you're going to be pater, because you have the right to try to do that mitzvah. So that's a fundamental machlokas rishonim. So the Gemara just notes, we just went through the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda's sheet is, whenever you're allowed to do something, by definition it's going to be pater. If it does any damage, you're not going to be responsible for that damage. Amar Abaye, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Rabbi Shimon, Kulasfir Luhu, Kalmakam Shasal Chamrushos, Vihizik Pater. There is this group of three Tanaim that all hold that whenever you have a heter to do something, whenever you're allowed to do something, if it damages, you're going to be pater from the damage that it does. I should mention that when it comes to had a paskin in this machlokas between our Mishnah and Rabbi Yehuda, can you leave the zevel out for any extended period of time or can you not? The Rif, according to the way Nemuka Yosef understands the Rif, paskins completely against Rabbi Yehuda, that even to leave it there for 30 days you're not allowed. You have to do directly like the Mishnah, motzi motzi, mizavel mizavel. Immediately, you put it out there and you go and you mizavel the fields. And even something that the Chacham give you rishus to do, like poskin people say, and you're allowed to have your gutters dump out into the shasram, the Rif holds against Rabbi Yehuda. Hiziku chayiv l'shalim. If it damages, one is going to be chayiv to pay. And that's what the Rif writes. Les hilchsa kichad minayu. We don't paskin like any of this. We paskin like the Mishnah. However, the Rush in Baba Kama in the 7th parak says that when it comes to the heter lahotzi, we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. When it comes to the heter to leave the zevel out in the Rosh Hashanah, that we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. But when it comes to if it damages, whether you're going to have to pay, that we don't paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. That the Rush paskins that you're in fact going to have to pay. That's how the Rush understands. So even though the Amorayim, tried to be dochek the Mishnah like Rabbi Yehuda, and it sounded like that it doesn't really work with that. Even though the Amorayim worked very hard to try to make the Mishnah fit with Rabbi Yehuda, it doesn't. That's not an indication that we necessarily paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. We don't paskin like Rabbi Yehuda when it comes to the payment for the damages. Okay, says the Gemara now. So we have these three Tanaim who all hold that whenever you're allowed to do something, by definition, you're going to be pater from any damages that are caused by what you're allowed to do. So what are the three Tanaim? Rabbi Yehuda Adamrin. We already said Shitas Rabbi Yehuda. You're allowed to leave the Zevel in Rosh Hashanah for 30 days. Therefore, if it does damages in those 30 days, you're pater. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the Shita of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, where do we find that? It's not. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Af Mesakenos Melachta Lefnei Shloshim Yom. That's our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, when we moved on to discuss building materials, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is the one who said you could set up your building materials 30 days in advance. So you see very clearly that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel holds that you're allowed to set up the building materials 30 days in advance, and therefore you're going to be putter if it does any damage. What's the third Tana? Rabbi Shimon, where do we find that Rabbi Shimon holds a similar idea? The Tanan, If you're setting up an oven on a top floor apartment and there's an apartment beneath you, you need a base under the oven that is three tvachim, that will lift the oven three tvachim off the ground, so that the ceilings of the bottom floor are not going to get ruined by the heat of your oven. Ubikira, but if it's a smaller type of a stove, tefach, then you only need one tefach. Once you did that, once you were marchik the way you were supposed to, you built the, you put all the proper safety precautions in place, vim hizik mashali mashi hizik. Tanakhama says, doesn't matter. If it damages, if it still causes heat damage for whatever reason, you're still going to have to pay for that, even though you did everything by the book. Rabbi Shimon Omer, lo omer kol ashur malal, lo shim hizik patim el shalim. Rabbi Shimon disagrees. He says, what's the whole point of having, having precautions and doing like you're supposed to do in order to avoid any damages if you're then going to have to pay for it? No, you're potter. As long as you did everything you were supposed to do, you're not going to have to pay for any damages. So that's the third time. That's Rabbi Shimon who holds that as long as you were acting berushus, as long as you were doing things properly, you're not going to have to pay. Tanu Rabbanan, we have a brisa that discusses the process of building and if damage happens during the process of building. Hachatzav shemasa l'satas, the guy who chisels the stone out of the mountain, who gives it to the guy who shapes the stone, who chisels the stone once it's already removed from the mountain. So the satas has it and it damages because the satas drops it. Hasatas chayiv. Then the satas is going to be chayiv. He's the one that dropped it. Hasatas shemasa l'chamar, if the satas gave it to a chamar, the one who carries it from the mountain and rides it on a donkey to the building site, so then a chamar chayiv, the chamar is going to be chayiv. Hachamar shemasa l'kasev, the chamar gives it to the guy who schleps it from the loading dock, I guess, to exactly where the building is. Hakasev chayiv, the guy who schleps it on his shoulder is going to be chayiv. Hakasev shemasa l'banai, the guy who schleps it from the loading dock to the building site gives it to the builder himself. Habanai chayiv, and the builder drops it, so the banai, the builder, is going to be chayiv. Habanai shemasa l'adrichal, adrichal chayiv. The builder gives it to the guy who actually straightens it out and makes sure that it doesn't protrude too much from the building and that it's exactly aligned perfectly with the rest of the stones in the building, so then that guy is going to be chayiv. What is the chiddush of anything we said? Apparently nothing. Apparently there's no chiddush yet. The chiddush is the next line. V'miniach evan al adimus v'hizika, if they already placed the evan down and it is now on the row of bricks and it's already, set and no one else is dealing with it anymore and now it damages, kulan chayavim l'shalim. It goes back on all of them. The chiv is on everyone who participated in the process. Va'tanya achron chayiv kulan peturim. But then we have a brisa that learns that only the last guy is chayiv. Everybody else is going to be potter. So how can we say that they're all going to be chayiv? Lo kasha kan b'schirus, kan b'kablanus. That when we say that the achron is chayiv, that's talking about where each guy is a sachir, meaning each one is hired to do his job. As soon as he does his job, he's finished. So the guy who chisels it out of the mountain, he's already home eating dinner by the time it's being put in the building, and he's no longer an employee of whoever hired him. He's done. He finished his job. So you're not going to say he's now chayiv if later on, while it's in the building, that stone does damage. But if it's bekablanus, that they're employees, they're all chayiv because they're all still employees. They're also their job is to get the job done. And until the job is done, none of them are getting paid. So they're all on the hook until the job is over. So if that's the case, then they're all still going to be chayiv. Okay, last Mishnah of the Masechta. Shtei ginos zu al gavzu. You have two gardens. One is elevated over the other. They're neighboring gardens, but one is on an elevated land. Vayerek penatayim, and there's vegetables growing on the incline in between the two gardens. So three shitos in Tanaim. Rameir Omer shel Elyon. Rameir says those vegetables belong to the guy in the upper garden. Rabbi Yudah Omer shel Tachton. Rabbi Yudah says no, those vegetables belong to the guy in the lower garden. Amar Rameir. Rameir explains himself. So far we only have two shitos, but we'll have the third later. Amar Rameir. Im yirtza Elyon nikach hasafaro en kanyarak. The Elyon should really have the upper hand, because if he wants, He can just dig out all the dirt from his upper garden and just even it out and make it that it'll be on an even level with the lower garden. And then you're not going to have any vegetables. The vegetables are growing out of the side of the incline. He could just remove the incline and then the vegetables will never grow there. So he has total control over the situation. Amr Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda says, yeah, but Emir Tzatachon L'malo Seskinoso Ein Kanyerek. But on the other hand, if the guy in the bottom garden wants to elevate the level of his garden, he could just dump dirt into his garden and all the airspace belongs to him. So he could dump as much dirt into his garden as he wants and elevate the level of his garden. And then you're also not going to have any yarek. You're also not going to have any vegetables growing out of the incline. So he's in complete control. Since obviously we see from each one's taina that they're both in control, each one has the ability to stop this these vegetables from growing. So Rowan mehechin yerek zechai. So Rameir says, so what you have to look at, the tiebreaker has to be, where is it getting its nourishment? Where is this vegetable growing from? Well, it's growing from the ground that belongs to the fellow in the upper garden. So it's going to belong to him. Amar Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says, compromise. Kol she elyon yachol lifshot es yadov litol hareyu shelo vashar shel tachton. Anytime the guy in the upper garden is able to reach and take from the vegetables, meaning without trespassing into the lower garden, just by sitting on the ground in his upper garden and reaching down and taking, that he's allowed to take. The rest is going to belong to the guy on the bottom. Why? What's the svara? So says Rashi, that essentially, Rabbi Shimon agrees with our mayor, that all of this should really belong to the guy in the upper garden. It's his dirt, it's his soil that is nurturing these vegetables. Why is it then that Vashar Shel Tachton, whatever he can't reach, belongs to the guy in the lower garden? Says Rashi, Ve'elyon Hugu Fe Afkure Mafkar Lehu Legabei Sheganayu Lo Litol Rishos Likonis Toch Shel Chaver Velilkot. Because he is being mafkirit to the guy in the lower garden. Because it's unpleasant to have to, yes, it may belong to me, these vegetables may belong to me, but I have no access to them. The only way I'm going to be able to access them is by either trespassing or getting permission to go into my neighbor's garden. That's lo na'im. It's not a pleasant thing to do, to have to ask someone else permission to go into their garden in order to fetch my vegetables. Therefore, I am mafkir these vegetables. So that's the way Rashi understands that. It's hefker, but hefker to that guy, to the guy in the lower garden. The Teferis Yaakov on the Mishnah says that apparently you see from here that you could be mafkir something to one person. Meaning you might think hefker by definition means I have no control of it. It's ownerless. Ownerless means whoever wants it can take it. So no, you see from here, I'm not mafkir to the whole world. No one else is allowed to go and take it. It's just that this one guy is allowed to take it. Now the Biyuda discussed this in Madur Tinyan Yardea Simin Kufn Dal, Pischa quotes it in Chosh Mishpah Reshayim Gimel, that hefker to one person works, and they try to be miyashiv that with the sheet of Beis Hillel in the sixth parak of Peah, where Beis Hillel talks about when you're only mafkir something la'aniyim, so is it hefker la'ashirim as well? And it sounds like you have to be mafkirit to everybody. So you say, no, that's if you're talking about categories of people. But if you're mafkir to one person, that you're allowed to do. You can be mafkir something where it belongs to one person alone. That's the raya is from our Rashi. Unless you say that Rashi is using the term hefker as lav dafka, that he really means that you're being makneh to the other person, that you're being mevater to the other person, but Rashi uses the term hefker, so we would prefer to assume that it's dafka, that he actually means it. Okay, says the Gemara, Amar Rava, bi'ikaro kuli amal pligi de'elyon havi. When we discuss who is entitled to the roots of those vegetables that are growing on the incline, that is nothing to debate. Everyone agrees that it's the guy in the upper garden that's entitled to those roots because they're growing 100% in his property. Ki pligi benofo. What they're arguing is about is the vegetables that grow out of the ground, meaning the branches that go out of the ground. Rameir savar shadi nofo basri ikaro. Rameir holds, well, the nof is just an extension of the ikar, of the root, and the root clearly belongs to the guy in the top garden. Therefore, the nof also belongs to the guy in the top garden. Rabbi Yehuda savar lo amrin shadi nofo basri ikaro. And Rabbi Yehuda says, not necessarily. We don't necessarily say that the nof follows the ikar. So, d'tanya, The vazel tamei. If you look on the side, Marshal takes it away and he says v'tanya nami gabi mekach mem karkia gavna ditanya. But let's see ditanya. Hayotzi, we have a similar type of discussion when it comes to selling something. Hayotzi min hageza umin hashrashin harel shel balakarka divra meir. What happens if a person, this is discussing a case where a person sells a tree to somebody else. So I have a field. I don't sell you my field. I sell you my tree, which means you don't own my field. You only own the tree. So the anything that grows out of the geza, out of the trunk of the tree, or out of the roots of the tree, belong to the balakarka. That's not considered part of the tree. That's a new growth. That's considered to be nourished from my karka, and therefore I, the balakarka, am the owner of it. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, wait, it depends where it's growing from. Mina geza shel bali ilan. If it's growing from the trunk of the tree, well, that belongs to the bali ilan. That's considered growth of the tree, not growth of the ground. Minashrashin shel balakarka. If it's growing from the roots, then ein ochinami. That's considered a brand new tree that belongs to the bal hakarka. So says the Gemara utna nami gabe orla kia gavna. And we have a very similar Mishnah when it comes to orla. Ilan ayotzi min hageza. See, the halach by orla is that anything that any fruits that grow in the first 3 years of a new tree are going to be asur ba'ana. But it's only if it's a new tree. If it's a new growth on an old tree, it's not subject to arla. So if you have some new growth coming out of a tree, we have to figure out, does that new growth qualify as a new tree, or does that new growth is it only considered an outgrowth of an old tree? So by arla we have a similar distinction. Ilan ayotze min hageza umin hashrashin chayiv bar ledivre meir, where a meir says no matter what, it's considered a brand new tree, just like he said when it comes to mekach memkar, that any part that grows out of the trunk or the roots is considered to belong to the balakarka, because it's not considered a growth of the tree, it's considered a brand new tree growing from the ground. So by arla as well, it's considered a brand new tree growing from the ground, no matter which part of the old tree it's growing out of, and therefore you're going to be chayiv in arla. Rabbi Yehuda Omer makes the same distinction that we said before. Min hageza pater, min hashrashin chayiv. If it's growing out of the trunk of the tree, you're going to be pater. From arla, that's considered to be just an extension of the old tree, but if it grows out of the roots, then you're going to be chayiv in arla. That's considered a brand new tree. So why do you need to tell me the same machlokas twice? Utsrichi. We need this machlokas both in the case of dine mamnus, of mekach u'memkar, where I'm selling you a tree in my land, and in the case of arla. Why? Diyash min kamaisa. If you only would have told me in the first case, in the case of mekach u'memkar, I would say, yeah, but hakam Rabbi Yehuda, that's where Rabbi Yehuda holds that it's going to be considered an outgrowth of the existing tree, mishum de mamona, because it's dine mamonis. So in terms of dine mamonis, we could be a little more makil and say that it belongs to the bal ha'ilan. Aval gabe orla di isura ema modin en rameir. But when it comes to orla, we're dealing with a suffik isser. We're dealing with a suffik isser daraisa, and therefore we have to be more strict and assume that it has the status of a new tree. Meaning, maybe Rabbi Yehuda's shita is based on suffik, that we're not really sure whether it's considered a brand new tree or not. So when it comes to Arla, maybe Rabbi Yehuda should really be Machmir. That's what we would have thought. If he only would have been Mekel when it comes to the Dine Mamnus issue, we would say, yeah, so it's a suffix. So he considers the Bal Ha'ilan to be Muchsak in whatever grows out of the trunk of the tree. So the Bal Ha'ilan gets to keep whatever grows out of the trunk of the tree. But an Isser, when you're dealing with an Isser Darais of Arla, no, then he's going to be Machmir. That's what we would have thought, that he'd be Moda to Rabbi Meir. So that's why we need to be told in the case of Arla, that Rabbi Yehuda is not mesupak at all. The Rabbi Yehuda stands his ground, and he holds that it's even when it comes to arla, we can be makel that this is just an outgrowth of the existing tree. V'yit mar baha, and if we only would have been told in the case of arla, baha kamer ameir, In the case of the the Arla, Baal Kam Rav Meir, I would say that's where Rabbi Meir holds by the Arla that it's all going to be chayiv in Arla because we have to be machmir. But maybe in the Dini Mamunis case, he'd be molded to Rabbi Yehuda. Trichi. That's why I need both in Dini Mamunis and in case of Arla. The Ramban already discusses why we don't make a third Trichusa because it wasn't just by Dini Mamunis and by Arla. We also had in our Mishnah when you have the vegetation growing out of the incline. So how come we don't make a tzrichusa of why we need our Mishnah as well? So that the Ramban deals with. But then we pointed out that there was a third shita. The third shita is Rabbi Shimon, that if you can reach it from the top, whatever the guy on the top can reach belongs to him. Whatever he can't reach does not belong to him. So it says Amri Dvei Rabbi Yanai. What does it mean he can reach it? It means he can reach it without putting his life at risk. He can reach it without causing any harm to himself. He can easily reach it. What about the following? The vegetables are growing on the incline, but they're growing upward. So you're able to reach the nof, you're able to reach where they've grown out to, but you can't reach all the way down to the roots. Or the magili karovan vein magilinofo. Well, let's say they're growing downward, so you can reach to the roots, but you can't actually reach to where they branched out to. So that the Gemara says, "My, what's the din? Teku." That we have no idea. Nagos Hagroi quotes that the Rush doesn't quote the second half of the Abaya. He only quotes Magil Inofo Vein Magil Liikaro. And it sounds that way from the Rambam as well, the fourth parak of Hilchos Sheinim, that by the suffix of the Gemara, he quotes only by Magil Inofo Vein Magil Liikaro, because Magil Liikaro Vein Magil Inofo Luchora, according to that Girsa, of course you're allowed to keep. I mean, if you can reach the roots, so then just yank the whole thing out, and then of course Shadinofo Basri Liikaro, then of course you'll be able to take the whole thing. Question is, you can't quite reach to the roots, so you're only going to get part of it. You're not going to be able to pull out the whole thing. So do we assume that you're allowed to take the noth in that situation? The Rush asks on the actual suffix of the Gemara, when you're magil enough of in magil yikaro, why not? Why can't you take that which you're magil lo? What would be the problem? And then the rest you'll be mafkir. You're not mafkir that which you can reach. Remember, the whole svara of Rashi is that you're mafkir to the guy because it's unpleasant to have to go down into his rishus. Well, it's not unpleasant. You don't need to go to his rishus to get the nof. So shouldn't it be obvious that you get the nof? So Beis Yosef in Chosh Mishpah Kuf Samach Zayin suggests that it is unpleasant because it's obvious to the guy below that plant has been tampered with. Meaning, if you're ripping out the nof and you're leaving the ikar there, so it looks like his plants have been tampered with, and it looks like, even though it's not true, it looks like someone trespassed into his property. And to create that impression between neighbors that you're going to try to yank out things that he's still entitled to the other half of, that alone is unpleasant enough that a person would try to avoid that kind of situation. And that goes Ashri, quotes from Ben Chananel, that any teku by mamon we paskin lakula, and therefore yachloku. What does it mean? Lakula? There's no lakula by mamon. It's a kula for one guy, it's a kumla for the other guy, yachloku. So we're gonna split it. Sri De'esh wonders in the Sri De'esh in a tshuva wonders why we don't say that we should be mamon al cheskaso, meaning it all starts as an ikar and then it grows out. The ikar, we said, clearly belongs to whoever can reach the ikar, right? Whoever can. So, if you can reach, if the guy, top guy can reach the ikar, so it definitely belongs to the top guy. So, okay, enochinami, the nof, it grows out and out and out to the point where it keeps growing down, where the top guy can't reach it anymore. But the last thing we knew, the last thing we knew for sure, the chazaka was that the top guy was the one that was entitled to it when it was very tiny. And now we're mesupuk about the continued growth. So why don't we say that you followed the chazaka in that case? That's the kasha that the Sri De'esh rather has. Says Gemara, the last little piece. Amar Ephraim Safra, Talmidu Shal Reish Lakish, Mishum Reish Lakish, Halacha K'Rabbi Shimon. That we paskin like Rabbi Shimon. Amruah kamei de Shavur Malcha. They said this in front of King Shavur, that we paskin like Rabbi Shimon. Amalu ipayir nim to the Rabbi Shimon. He said, oh, we should give a lot of chayin to Rabbi Shimon, and meaning it's chayin shalanu rash. We approve. We're very approving of this idea of paskin like Rabbi Shimon. If you look at Rashi, who is Shavur Malcha? Linir Shavur Malcha mamishu melech paras haya ubaki bedinim. That he was the melech paras. He happened to be a big bucky in Dine Mamanus. He was a guy, but he happened to be a big bucky in Dine Mamanus, so they valued his opinion of what was fair and what was just. Says the Sri Deish, Chelek Beisim and Unvav Os Yud, you see from here that you're allowed to teach Dinim to Bnei Noach. That since Bnei Noach are chayiv in dinim, so it's one of the shavim of Bnei Noach, you're allowed to teach them our dinim as well, because you see that they told Shvar Malcha and Martz Chayus in the back of a Gemara. The Gemara of here says the same exact thing. However, in the Ein Eliyahu on our sugya, he quotes Martz Chayus and he points out that it's not so pashut. Bnei Noach are chayiv in dinim. That just means they're chayiv to set up some sort of system that's fair. They have no obligation to set up our system. That they don't have to do. So to teach them our dinim, so maybe not. Maybe that you're not supposed to let them know our dinim. So that's a major discussion in the Acharon, what exactly one is and is not permitted to teach to Bnei Noach. Hadron Lechabai Yisraeli, Yosikala Maseches Bava Metzia, Bez Hashem, tomorrow we will begin Maseches Bava Basra. Mazel Tov, everybody.